Okay, we're back now, and pleased to have Bill Child in the studio with us, the former CEO, retired CEO of RC Willie. It's founded as a little appliance store on an intersection in Syracuse, Utah, which is out toward the Great Salt Lake in Davis County between Ogden and Salt Lake, and took that store over, built it into the RC Willie we know today, and then lo and behold, about 15 years ago, Warren Buffett comes along and puts it into his company, and you've had a long association with him since then. Bill, why don't you first quickly tell us the story of how you got into the furniture business, because as I recall, you first wanted to be a teacher. That's the direction you were going.
Well, by the way, it is a beautiful day in Park City, and I kind of wish I were up on the slopes. It's absolutely
well,
beautiful.
We'll be out of here in 20 minutes.
Oh, wonderful.
I don't know if a three-piece suit's going to fly out there.
It may not. But I have had the fulfillment of the American dream when I look back. Of course, it took 50 years to do it, so you need to be patient. But the history of RC Willie Company is rather interesting, and the reason for writing the book, having it written, was the fact that when the author got a hold of it, he said, well, you know, in 1954, you took over a company that was bankrupt. Your father-in-law had run it for 22 years, selling door-to-door, and built his store, forced to build his little store in Syracuse. It was on right at the corner of a corn patch, and the power, electric power, was run from the house to the store. There were no bathroom facilities, 9-party telephone line. And when I took it over, I thought, well, every business has money. I think it's not a problem. Started looking at some of the bank statements, and they were all in the red. And I thought, well, the bank must have something worked out with him. But anyway, there I was. And then 40 years later, we sell it to the second richest man in the world. So there's got to be a lot in between. And I think that's what the author was interested in putting in the book. How did you get from 1954, more or less underwater financially, to selling it to the second richest man in the world.
Well, and that's what we have 20 minutes to talk about.
And it wasn't just that. It was the fact that here it was owned by your father-in-law, mm-hmm. and then he hands you the keys, and he says, I'm going to California on a vacation. You run the place. And instead of going to California, he goes in the hospital, and he dies. And then you find out that, okay, it's underwater. And the bank says, you ought to just go ahead and sell it. And you're thinking, but if I do that, then my mother-in-law is going to have no income. And maybe teaching isn't in the cards right now.
That's true. I grew up in that little town of Syracuse. And there was one the blacksmith shop. And there was a general store. And there was a barber shop. And that was basically it. There was probably 300 to 400 people. It had a sign, Welcome to Syracuse, population 343, something like that, right down our street. But anyway, my father-in-law worked for the power company, started in 1932 when they were electrifying that west part of Davis County and Weber County and putting electricity into all those homes. And, of course, basically, they had the light bulbs, but the important thing was the power company wanted them to use more power, and, of course, you do that through appliances. And they were just barely coming out with refrigerators and electric ranges, and that was basically the product. And he had saved enough money to buy his wife a refrigerator, and it was the hit of the town. Everybody thought that was wonderful to have an electric refrigerator when you had, of course, obviously no air conditioning. And in the meantime, he had been working for the power company. Yet it was Utah Power and Light. That's interesting because Rocky Mountain Power is now owned by Warren Buffett.
Oh, my gosh.
And so it goes back to the roots. He started working for Utah Power and Light, and then 75 years later, his company is bought by the person that owns Rocky Mountain Power, our electrical power here, Warren Buffett.
And what I loved was the way your father-in-law would go to a farmer and say, I want to sell you a refrigerator, and the farmer would say, I can't afford it.
Oh, I can't afford
that. And R.C. Willie said, well, but you can use it for a week, and then if you don't want it, I'll take it back. And of course, by the second day, the wife's thinking, there's no way this refrigerator is ever leaving this home. It's way better than an icebox. It's staying.
He knew how to impress the women with that particular product. Not having one, you didn't miss it, but having one, you would never let it go. And so he never really took any out. He never checked anybody's credit. He had a farm plan. The farmer would say, well, I don't have any money, and he really didn't until harvest time, so he would arrange for them to make the payments when the crops were in, and usually put it over 1 or 2 years or 3 years, and he'd made arrangements with the local banker, and so he had a wonderful marketing plan and had done very well until about 1949. His reputation got to the point to where a lot of the competition thought, you know, we can't compete with this guy. He's selling products too cheap. He doesn't have any overhead. They went to the distributor and said, this guy's got to have a store, a storefront. He's got to be a legitimate merchant. You can't sell him.
Because he was just selling out of his home, right?
He was selling out of his home and out of the back of his pickup truck. Uh-huh. He had a double car garage. So he was forced to build the store, and he built it or buy a store, rent a store, go uptown. Everyone thought going uptown was the thing to do, but he did it only to comply. But after building that 600-square-foot store right next to the house out in the farmland of Syracuse, he found that people liked it. They liked to come and look, pick from 5 or 6 refrigerators and 4 or 5 ranges, electric ranges, rather than the one on the back of the pickup truck.
But his forte was selling, and he wasn't good at accounts receivable or accounts payable, right? So
no.
So when you took over the company, 2/3 of the customers were not paying making their payments, right?
Yes, that was one of the striking things. And all those contracts, we had $150,000 worth of contracts outstanding. 50,000 were current, 100,000 were not.
Ouch.
A lot of them were on the farm plan, and all the contracts were actually full recourse, meaning that if the customer didn't pay, the dealer had to. I couldn't even write a check for $20 that would clear, let alone $100,000.
So what did you try to get a hold of first when you found that things were just that messed up?
Well, it was after talking to the banker who wanted us to close it. He thought, here's a kid that just graduated from college, doesn't 22 years old, doesn't know the first thing about business. And I think we were talking about common sense. I did have pretty good common sense, raised on a farm. Dad and mother were very frugal, and I realized the value of hard work and money and so forth. And the one thing after I analyzed the fact that, probably we could and should probably just walk away and I should go teach school. I had a contract that I'd never signed. But we had a good reputation, and there was not enough money within the company to pay all the obligations and bills. My mother-in-law would have lost the house, everything. In fact, the company, it was interesting, when I tried to get a loan, I found out that we had just built a 2,000-square-foot warehouse and owned $9,000 on it. We'd had a fire and destroyed the double-car garage, and he had gotten some insurance and paid a lot of bills fairly current. And then, of course, we had the little store, and that was on the property of the house, and so was the warehouse. So the company itself only had a pickup truck. We had an inventory, but it was fully not paid for.
So how did you get through the first couple of months?
It was basically
on your reputation and saying, I'm going to make this work.
Yes, we did have a great reputation. That was the one asset we had, and it was a day-to-day process. We, at that time, nobody ever thought of bankruptcy. Nobody ever thought of not paying a bill that you owed. No one ever thought of quitting. And there I was alone, though. I did have one employee who was a very good delivery and repair person. We had an accountant who I later found out, it didn't take me long to figure out that he was dishonest.
And so he was out the door.
Yes.
And so you had to find a good one. Okay. So you basically learned business kind of at the point of a gun, just
the hard
about.
Way.
And what you learned was that you weren't the salesman RC was, but you were certainly a better businessman.
Yes.
And that what you needed to do from those humble beginnings was diversify get into a bigger city where there were more people to sell appliances mm-hmm. to.
That's true. It took a long time, though, to finally get your head above water. Right. And
but that took the patience and the hard work and just staying
and hard
at
work
it. And it's kind of an incrementalism, isn't
right.
it? It's just incrementally you pay mm-hmm. off this, you pay off the next thing, you pay off the yep. next thing, and then gradually mm-hmm. you can begin to get to a bigger picture mm-hmm. and say, where can we expand
so it,
and how can
yeah,
we diversify?
Yeah, so it must have taken a leap of faith to go to Murray, I think was your next store, and that was big.
That was well, that was the reason for that. I might just make one comment about, I think one of the, you know, you think back of some of the important decisions that we've made, and I make the note of those in the book that really were very instrumental in your success and in your continued survival. And you mentioned what my day-to-day operation was. It was survive. It was just survival, try to take care of obligations as you possibly could. I had one conversation with this banker who was a wonderful guy, and it goes on to say Mr. Willie had dealt with an old banker, a fellow by the name of Dick Gailey, who was a wonderful guy, but he'd gone to Europe. So here the new president to be is the guy that looked at it and says, you know, we got trouble here with this R.C. Willie account. And he wanted me to close it and so forth. He met with my mother-in-law and I and so forth. And I went through and said, after I had thought about it, I called him and talked to him. I said, Mr. Blood, we have a little problem. I said, if you close this down, you're not going to get anything. There is nothing in this company. You will be actually ending up with zero. I said, and I don't know. There's no assets enough to anywhere near come to paying you off. We can't take care of all the contracts. We can't even take care of the Red Bank account. And that's when...
What a contrast.
Yeah.
What a contrast to 1995 when Warren Buffett says, okay, give me your financials for the last couple of years, and you ship them off to him. And he's looking, and you've got six stores. You've grown from to $250 million in sales per year in 1995, 177,000 customers with active revolving credit accounts. Yeah. That's, I think it's something like that. Mm-hmm. 70% growth in sales and profits each year. And no debt. I mean, what a huge contrast. And so he had to love that. I mean, absolutely love that. What did he tell you?
He said, you have a perfect a business that fits my mold perfectly, and I'll have you a price in 3 days after we had talked to him. He was so excited about it when he got the financials. And having that rough beginning really did teach me some awful good lessons about thrift and about debt.
And about the power of a good reputation.
A great reputation.
You can be closed on Sundays and people don't care. They want to deal with somebody who's honest.
Taking care of your customers.
Yeah.
Actually, it was 17% growth over the 40 years that we had. We averaged 70% growth a year and an increase of 70% in earnings, in net profit.
That is absolutely phenomenal.
So we skipped through the middle there
In
a heartbeat because we wanted to also talk about your relationship with Warren Buffett. So needless to say, over time with patience and using growth, managing growth wisely so it didn't eat you alive, you did reach this point where you were looking toward retirement and the awful burden of tax burden of selling a company. So you did a stock deal with Warren Buffett. Did you have anybody else who wanted to buy R.C. Willie?
Yes, it was interesting. We really had no reason to sell the company except for the fact that I was getting old, or older. And it just, you know, when companies came to us, we had five companies come to us and want to buy us, and we had not solicited any of them. And we were shocked at the amount of money that they were willing to pay us, but we were not very happy with how they wanted to structure the company. And so we turned almost all of them down. And I said to a friend of mine, I said, you know, there's no way I would sell to anybody, but maybe Warren Buffett might be the one. And so...
And this friend already had sold his company to Warren
Buffett,
right?
Yes, he had. He really had. And he had told me such glowing reports about dealing with Warren, how what a mentor he was, and what a wonderful partner he was. And and I would say to this, anybody that's listening that has an opportunity to deal or to have any interactions or to sell anything to Warren Buffett, do it. You'll never be disappointed.
But the other nice thing is that Warren Buffett's idea is to let you continue to run the business.
And that was the key. We have been closed on Sunday. We want to take care of our associates. We had about 1,700 at the time. And they had helped build the business. They really had. They were the catalyst to building that business. You know, I gave the directions. I worked with my brother, who was wonderful for 30 years, and we had we were all on the same page. We wanted to do what was right. We wanted to grow the business, but we wanted to service the consumer more. We weren't as interested in profit. It just seemed to come. We're more interested in doing a better job.
And this is the statement you were saying about it's important to develop relationships, and that it's that relationship that's based on honesty that's just the easiest to maintain, because it's people standing on the truth, they know that they're going to be friends with whoever's standing on the truth. So.
That's right. It's sort of like I think it's been said many times, it takes you many years to build a good reputation. You can destroy it in one day or with one incident, and that's we've seen happen a number of times recently. But And that was our philosophy. We wanted to be what we wanted to be. We wanted to grow and develop. We wanted to really take care of the consumer and get them terrific values on home furnishings. We wanted to give them a reason to patronize us. In other words, the bigger displays, the better values, the better marketing program.
And never sitting on your laurels. Right.
Yes.
I mean, I think after 20 minutes, your laurels are completely sat out. So I think that's the maximum you can sit on your laurels.
Right. Yeah, that's true. You never can be satisfied. The world changes. And I think one of the most important things that we were able to do is to adapt to change and manage change. And I think all businesses today, CEOs are faced with that one problem is managing change. Right. Because today isn't like it was before. The past is predictable, but the future is difficult.
And so you would change what's in R.C. Willey all the time.
Always, constantly moving ahead.
And you found that the places that didn't change went out of business.
That's the basic reason.
There are a lot of really good lessons in this book. This is Jeffrey Benedict's book, How to Build a Business Warren Buffett Would Buy. And a lot of good lessons in there, and we thank you for bringing in some books that are going to go straight to the libraries around here. So that's
well, we're honored. We hope someone can gain and get some information and maybe a little direction in their life and some great business concepts and ideas in reading the book. We've been so elated because of the unsolicited endorsements for the book. And the enthusiasm that people have had that have read the book, and
it's a wonderful book.
So what have you been able to do with Warren Buff being part of Berkshire Hathaway, with the store? You're no longer a Salt Lake or even a Utah only store.
No, we actually are doing more business outside of the state of Utah than we are in. Our Sacramento store has just been a home run for us, as has the Las Vegas area. As depressed as it is, we're still showing increases there. Reno's been great. Boise, Idaho was terrific.
So you're the regional superstore of furniture.
Yes.
And one thing I've heard from outsiders is that, well, R.C. Willey doesn't really make money on the furniture. They make the money on the installment contracts. And you are about the largest holder of commercial paper, I would think, in the whole state or region. Is that where the profit is in the furniture business?
Well, it's certainly it's a good package, and that's one of the things that Warren did like about it was the fact that we were diversified, that we did have a great portfolio of accounts receivable that were, you know, people will pay you if they are satisfied and if they love their furniture. And so that gives you a double edge there. You have to make sure they're satisfied and happy. And the financial end of it was an end that I just you try to look outside the box and say, what is it going to take to make our company successful and solid and sound and stable? And that is.
And you also established a reputation for really looking at customers to make sure that they could afford the payments before giving them credit, too. And that was a big change from your father-in-law.
Oh, that's true. Yes. Yeah, we don't want to. We love to make sales, but we don't want to sell anyone that's going to a product that is going to put a financial burden on them in any way.
There's only a few minutes left, Bill, and I think it'd just be great fun to hear a little bit more about Warren Buffett. I read that you, Warren Buffett, and Bill Gates played golf at Augusta. I mean, playing golf at Augusta would be a dream, and here you are with the two richest guys in North America. What is that like to travel in company like that?
Let me tell you what. I mean, the fulfillment of the ultimate dream. I like to play golf. I'm not very good anymore. I used to think I was, you know, I used to be better than I am today, and I loved golfing. And one day we were chatting about that, and Warren said, "Well, yeah, we'd like to go and take you to Augusta." And I said, "Oh, I'd love to do that." He called me and he said, "How about a certain date?" And I said, "Oh, I'd love to." He said, "Well, Bill Gates and some of the Microsoft people are going to go. Tom Murphy, CEO of Capital City ABC, is going to join us." And he said, "I think we'd have a wonderful time." And oh, boy. So I flew to Omaha. We got on Warren's private jet, flew into Augusta, Georgia, and where they play the Masters. And after the first nine holes, and it was fabulous, first nine holes, went up to the restroom, which was right next to it, the card room, and there were some guys in there, and they said, "You know, we've got quite a foursome out here. We've got Warren Buffett, we've got Bill Gates, we've got Tom Murphy, and then there's some other guy." And I was the other guy.
The kid from Syracuse.
The little kid from Syracuse.
Well, what's it been like to know Warren Buffett? Is he a genuine, warm guy? He sure comes off that way on television.
Oh, definitely. He is a fabulous individual. His morals, his integrity is just unbeatable. When we signed the contract finally for the purchase of the company, we signed all the documents, and we have 15 years later, we've never referred to one of them. We've never had a misunderstanding of any kind, any shape, form. He's so bright and so accessible. And it's been more or less like I could have spent 2 years at Harvard, never learned more, to be honest with you. He has changed my life in many ways, particularly in the investing side and the way to handle people. His management style is, I think, should be emulated by every major CEO. He holds you accountable, but still he gives you a lot of leeway.
And he's frugal. He doesn't have to be, but he's frugal, and he's giving most of his money away.
He is. He's very generous. He realizes, he can't take it with him, and he doesn't live lavishly. His home is you would never know it's Warren Buffett's home. It's a $200,000 or $300,000 home, he said it's all I need. What more do I need?
Well, and the two of you, I think, also have fun at business.
Oh, this has been the most fun. There's an interesting story about how we got him to go out of state and stay on closed on Sunday. And that was a very interesting story in the book. And I had to think out of the box a little bit and make him a deal he couldn't turn down.
And you did it, and you put up your own money on it, too.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
Okay, well, we want to thank Bill Child, the retired CEO of R.C. Willey, and the subject of the new book, How to Buy a Business, Warren Buffett Would Buy.